shows that it's posted, and this is the BaltimoreTorah.com. Oops.
Okay. Good morning. We are at Perek Chof, chapter 20, the Gvuras Hashem. And we are in the middle of the story of Moshe Rabbeinu's arrival in Midian, his meeting up with Yisro through meeting up with his daughters. And last Perek, in Perek Yotes, we spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu's marriage, which hasn't happened yet, but obviously this whole thing is a setup for that. And so we, you know, Perek Yotes was fairly long, talking about Moshe Rabbeinu and the fights and having to run away. And in the last two sessions we had, we talked about Moshe Rabbeinu's marriage. So here in Perek Chof, we actually return to the sequence of the story, where Moshe Rabbeinu gets up, he sees what's going on, he sees that the daughters of Yisro are being harassed at the well, and he gets up and he saves them, and he gives Vayashkes Hatzayin, and he gives the sheep to drink. And the daughters of Yisro go home, they tell their father what happened, he says, come, invite him, kiren levi'echa lachem. So it's that short, little bit in the psukim that's going to be the subject here of Perek Chof. So we'll start from the beginning. As we said, it's sort of a running commentary, so it's pieces, little pieces, not necessarily one thematic idea in the whole Perek, but pieces which are significant pieces. What he's doing here is taking the midrashim on these verses. And Vayakam Moshe Vayeshion, the pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu arose and he saved them. And the midrash interprets from by association that the word Vayakam means is associated with din, with judgment. Melamed Shaya Moshe Yeshev Aleim B'din, Moshe Rabbeinu was there in judgment, and then he got up from the judgment, right, and he acted. He acted. So what's the idea? So the way the Maral explains it is like this. Kedayan Hamisair Lases Maise Kasher Yire Be'enav Ha'ivus V'Hashekher Lokach Nemar Vayakam V'Hisairus Hadin. He says, when a judge acts from assessing a situation, it is because he stands for truth and justice, and he is eminently disturbed by evils, by distortion and sheker and falsehood. So he makes the judgment and he acts by yokum, he gets up to act in order to correct that distortion of truth, that distortion of justice. And as the Maral says, v'zeu ha'irua al ha'nefesh ha'shleima shel Moshe. This is an indication of the wholeness, the perfection of the nefesh of Moshe Rabbeinu, the profound sensitivity for truth which is there in Moshe Rabbeinu. And we've touched upon it before, that there's a whole sequence of events in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu that in this short little condensed passage in the beginning of the story of Moshe Rabbeinu in Parsha Shmos, in the second paragraph of Parsha Shmos, where Moshe Rabbeinu grows up, he sees a Jew being hit by an Egyptian, he saves him. He sees two Jews fighting, he saves them. Takes more, when the enemy is attacking your brother, then of course you save him. When two brothers are fighting, it's a little bit of a different story, because, so to speak, your sympathies will have you on both sides of the argument. But Moshe Rabbeinu still stands up and defines who's the Rasha, who's the Tzaddik, to save his brother. And he goes to Midian, he goes even further. And there, he's concerned with strangers who are not his brother on either side of the equation, and he saves them. And it is because Moshe Rabbeinu is a shofet, a judge, as he was accused by Dathan and Aviram on that second day that he came out in Mitzrayim. Misamcha l'ish sar v'shofet aleinu, who appointed you as a judge? You're a self-appointed judge. So he was accused of that. But the fact is that Moshe Rabbeinu did act as a shofet, because Moshe Rabbeinu had an absolute desire for truth and discomfort with sheker, with falsehood. The Gemara in Sanhedrin describes that there was Moshe and Aaron, both played leadership roles in Klal Yisrael, and the leadership role to some degree was divided when it came to matters between people. Moshe Rabbeinu was din, judgment, and Aaron HaKohen was pshara, was compromise. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yikov hadin es ahor. It's an interesting expression that the Gemara uses, hard to understand or to translate, you know, so to speak. There's an idiom there, but he says, let the judgment pierce the mountain. In other words, judgment is strong, judgment is precise, judgment is firm. Judgment should cut through all the chazarai and get to the result as needed. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's perspective. Aaron HaKohen was Ayiv Shalom, Vareid of Shalom. Aaron HaKohen loved peace and pursued peace. So he really represented the attitude and the approach of pshara, of compromise, of trying to find common ground. And Aaron HaKohen famously used to play liberties with truth in order to bring shalom, which is often the case. That's as the Gemara says, Mishani Mipnei HaShalom. You can sometimes take liberties with the truth for the sake of creating peace between people. So that was the approach. That was the derech of Aaron HaKohen. That was what he did. That was his quote-unquote compromise of truth for the sake of shalom, for the sake of peace. But that wasn't Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was Emes. And the person of Emes is disturbed when they see Sheker. When Yaakov Avinu, who was Emes, came to the house of Lavan, to the area of Lavan, right, what does he see? He sees the shepherds lounging around at the well. He says, what are you guys doing? Yes, there's still a day's work to do. It's an unusual story. Yaakov Avinu is, generally speaking, not confrontational. He even learned to live with Lavan, the trickster, for a long time and somehow play his game. But here, before he was knowing what he was dealing with, I suppose, in terms of tricking and so on and so forth, what's going on? What's going on? You should be working. You're workers, you're hired, you have a day's work to do. What are you doing, you know, at the water cooler? So this is the Nefesh Hashlema. This is a Hayroah here too. When Moshe Rabbeinu stands up, he's standing up from din. So, you know, you could take a medrash like that and say, okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting, you know, bench. Okay, what's the case? That's not what it means. Moshe Rabbeinu came to a strange land. He was by himself. He was a refugee, right, fugitive, I should say, rather. And he's there. But what made him move was his sense of justice. Moshe Rabbeinu's sense of justice is what got him to stand. So that's Vayoka Moshe. Vayoshion, and he saved them. Next phase, says the Maral, what's Vayoshion? Chazal Darshan and Vayoshion, it should have just said Vayatzilon. And this part of the diuk is a little hard for me to fully understand, because that's the way it was characterized by the daughters of Yitzhar. Ish Mitzri Hitzilonu Miyad Harayim. He saved us. But he uses the term Yoshion, which is a much greater term of salvation, you know, than Yitzilon. It's even deeper and a greater salvation. And the Medrash brings a machlekes between Rebbe Lozer ben Yeshua Rabbi Yossi HaGlili and the Rabbanan. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, Rebbe Lozer ben Yeshua Rabbi Yossi HaGlili says that when these shepherds were there, they weren't just pushing in front of them in line, but rather they wanted to rape them. And Moshe Rabbeinu saved them. And the Rabbanan say, no, they wanted to kill them. Remember, Yisrael was on the outs and so on and so forth, and they saved them from physical harm. So the Maral explains, where Chazal coming from? So they say, look, what's the issue that they're struggling with that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be helping them with? To make it, so to speak, the relatively small issue, the Dvar Mikra, the sort of issue stands: who's going to get the water first? So it's true. They should get the water first. It says Maral, no. So why can't they get the water after the rain? Why can't they get the water after the shepherds? Instead, it becomes a much more substantial thing. Much more substantial thing. Now, Maral doesn't mean that it's not an injustice for them to get the water after the shepherds. And remember, it's not even just a matter of sequence. The daughters of Yisrael had filled the troughs. Right? Somebody's got to do the heavy work of drawing the water, filling them, and then they could do it. And what happens? The shepherds came along and didn't just say, we're going to go to the spring first. They chased them and they wanted to drink the water that the daughters of Yisrael had drawn for themselves. So, it's not an issue of Moshe Rabbeinu standing up for justice that he would say, it's not such a big deal, let them go second. No. Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Pasuk describes simply, is disturbed by what he sees. What's one of the rules of a judge in Jewish law? Is din pruta kedin mea. The din of a pruta, there's no such thing as a small claims court in Jewish law. Every court is a small claims court and a large claims court. Doesn't matter whether it's for $10 or for $10 million. The same level of justice is to apply. So the Maral doesn't mean to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was only disturbed by this because they wanted to rape them or kill them. No, Moshe Rabbeinu was disturbed by it because of what the Pasuk describes. However, the level of significance to which Moshe Rabbeinu plays a role here, as the way the Maral says it is, you know, our attitude throughout the story is that the things which happen here are not derech mikra. They're not small things that happen. They're integral. They're essential things. And whether you get your water first or your water second, whether the water you draw you get to use, or somebody else elbows you aside and they use it and you don't get to use it and somebody else does it, look, it's a question of justice or injustice, and somebody could stand up for it. But in the end, after all is said and done, even if justice is not served, it isn't the end of the world for you. But if those shepherds weren't just there to take their water, but were there to attack them physically, or, you know, to threaten their lives, or to dover shel gili arayis, or morally, then you understand that the rule of Moshe Rabbeinu is not just, oh great, we got to drink first. It was, he saved our lives. And therefore, Chazal understand that that's the what the Pasuk is conveying by Yeshion. He saved them. He didn't just save them that they didn't have to wait in line and draw water again. That's not called saving. He saved us. And Maral continues, this is footnote to this little piece, is fascinating. Fascinating footnote. He says, Ladasra Belazar Ikar Hachua Menachet Shogili Arayas. So they know that this is Chua in a major, major way. What would be the most major way that there would be salvation? According to Rabbi Lazar, it was from the corruption of Gili Arayis. Shezet Shua Gemura Chuas HaNefesh. That's saving their souls. According to the Rabbanan, no, it was physical salvation, because that's a bigger deal. If the person's dead, they can't do anything. So the greatest Chua is to save their physical life. Says the Maral, so this Machlaikas is a debate about what would be the greatest thing that they would save them from. From a physical threat or from a spiritual threat. And you can view it both ways. Because, you know, if a person dies physically, but there's still, look, there's an Olam Haba. Okay, no big problem. But if a person is killed spiritually or, violated spiritually, so then what's left? On the other hand, if a person's violated spiritually, they can still rehabilitate. But if a person is killed, then there's nothing more that they can do. So the Maral concludes this paragraph by saying the following astounding suggestion. Ve'efsher ki yesh chiluk b'neihem b'din. It's possible that the midrashic opinions of Rabbi Lasser ben Eishe Rabbi Yosi Aglili and the Rabbanan have a halachic component too. According to Rabbi Eliezer, listen to this case. Okay, this is a great, People have these dinner parties where they pose moral, ethical questions, right? The ethicist column in the New York Times. Okay, what happens is there are two people chasing after two other people. There are two men, let's say for simplicity, each one chasing after a woman, right? You're standing on a street corner in, Soho, like some teeming neighborhood on a Saturday night, right? And you're with a few Ravens players. And one guy is running in one direction. He's running after a woman, and he's brandishing a gun. He says, "I'm going to kill you." And in the other direction, there's a guy running after a woman, and he's clearly running after her, not to kill her, but to rape her, to attack her in that way. And you can save, but you can only save one. What do you do?
You hold by the rabban.
So suggest the morale. It's possible that this is a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer ben Asher, Rabbi Yosi Aglieli, and the Rabbanan. That if over here, where we're trying to describe that it wasn't just that Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Oh, don't worry, you're going to get your water first," but Yoshian, he saved them. He saved them from the worst possible calamity. Rabbi Eliezer ben Asher, Rabbi Yosi Aglieli said the worst possible calamity was the rape. So therefore, if a person has a choice to save two people, one to save them from being killed, and the other one to save them from a rape, you should save the one from the rape. And according to the Rabbanan, they say, no. From that, the person's still alive, they can recover. The worst thing, the more important thing is to save their life. So he would say, save them that way. Now you know that there's a pasuk in Chumash that says, Ki kasher yokum ish al re'eil uretzachay nefesh kein hadavar hazeh. The pasuk says that when a man goes and attacks a woman, so we say that if it was in the field and she was defenseless and she couldn't, scream out, like if it was in the city, we say, why didn't she scream out? It must be that she was a willing partner. But if she was in the field and she cried out, but there was nobody there to save her, so then was an inus, she was forced, it was forced upon her. So we say she doesn't get punished, only he gets punished. Why? It's like a murder. Now the simple meaning of the pasuk is that she's a victim of a crime rather than a participant in an immoral act. That's the simple pshat in the pasuk. So you're not going to punish her for being a victim. She's been punished, so to speak, enough. However, the Gemara learns from that a halacha, a very serious halacha and a very well-known halacha. We all know the halacha. We may not all be as familiar with the source. What's the halacha? There are three things for which we see a horeg val yavar. You should give up your life rather than transgress. What are the three averis? Avodah zarah. How do you know avodah zarah? You give up your life rather than transgress. Yehoreg val yavar is because of what we read this morning in Kriyat Shema. V'yahavtas Hashem elokecha b'chol nafshecha. You should love Hashem with all of your soul. Means afilu naitales nafshecha. Even if your love of Hashem means taking your life, that's understood to be referring to the service of Hashem versus the service of quote unquote other gods. So from there we learn that you have to give up your life rather than serve avodah zarah. Shvichas damim, murder. How do you know a person has to give up their life rather than commit murder? Says the Gemara. Well, that's a svara. Because how could you say, you know what, I'm going to get killed, let me kill that person so I won't get killed? My chazis, the dama didach sumaktvei. Based on what do you say that you have more of a right to life than that person? So for you to actively take their life in order to save your own, you have no right to do that. That's, you know, how do you know for gili arayis? The third one is gili arayis, is an act of sexual immorality, a serious act of sexual immorality. All kinds of questions about how serious, but whatever it is. For that, you also have to give up your life rather than transgress. How do you know? Says the Gemara from the pasuk that I just said to you. Kasher yokum ish areu retzachay nefesh kein hadavar hazeh. Because the pasuk says, it's like somebody getting up to kill somebody. So it is in this case where he got up to rape this person. So what the Gemara is saying is that it's not just a matter of having been victimized and so she's powerless, but it actually takes it as an equation. murder, rape, equal. And therefore, the same way murder is Yehareg Val Yavar, so too immorality is Yehareg Val Yavar. So you understand that that's already an opening to this discussion. He saved them from the worst possible thing. What's the worst possible thing? Well, it depends how you look at it. The worst possible thing could be murder. The worst possible thing could be rape. And when it comes down to it, this one argues this one argues that one. So Maral says it's possible that it's a debate actually as to which one is more serious. And in a rare circumstance, I mean, where do you have a halachic shaila about this? You know, where else? So he came up with a scenario. Okay, try it at a dinner party sometime. Okay, it's a very interesting question. I don't know Makairis, you know, lahalacha for a discussion of this, you know, of this question. Besides for this discussion, this question raised by the Maral, but it's a fascinating. I think it's a fascinating.
But here they were in the field. So you could make the argument that really the higher level was saving them from death because they were potter from a rape. It wasn't that there was
well, they would have been victims of murder or victims of rape. When the person is a victim of a rape, we say it's like they're a victim of murder.
So
the question is, then they debate. So which one was this? Which one was worse? I mean, so you know, I think you know, it's not because they did the avera. You know, even forced participation. As long, you know, the interesting thing, you know, maybe, you know, as you could say, you know, karka olam, they would be completely passive, so they wouldn't be doing anything at all. So again, but it's not so much a question. Still, at the end, after all is said and done, the pasuk says that they're considered to have been murdered. And again, the way the Gemara interprets the pasuk.
With respect to the perpetrator, but with respect to the victim, there's a big difference.
In terms of they didn't commit any more crime than a murder victim committed. It's not, but the question is the damage. What he did is considered like he murdered them. So says Rabbi Lazar. So it's, and maybe it's even worse. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating question. Okay. Okay.
I'm gonna say it seems like it sheds light on Israel's response also. So you know, why do you leave him out there? Bring him in. Right? So it's like it was just negotiating water, like saying no, they get the drink first. It didn't seem like such a big deal. Like, the question I had: why is Yisro so interested in getting Moshe Rabbeinu to come visit?
Okay. It what it does is it makes the story so much more, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu so much more in their lives than instead of just okay, so we didn't get pushed out of line. And they came to Ru'uel. So, again, we're progressing through the psukim, and so the next thing it says, they came to Ru'uel, their father. Now, what's interesting here is, who's Ru'uel? Ru'uel is Yisrei. Yisrei had a lot of different names, a lot of different Swiss bank accounts. So the question is, why suddenly is he Ru'uel? Why here is he known as Ru'uel? Now, the name Ru'uel is a very nice name. Chazal say that he's called Ru'uel al shem shenase rea lokel. He became like a rea, like a friend. He became a rea to Hashem. Va'atahu hascholas hadvekus l'Yisrael Hashem Yisbarach, says the Maral. So why does it say it here? Because what is going to be Yisrael's attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's going to be really firmly attached through Moshe Rabbeinu. Shoyachshav hischil shabo Moshel Zera Yisrael. That now it began that Moshe Rabbeinu has the relationship with him. So that's why here he's called Ru'uel, because now his real connection is beginning. Now the Maral here says something which he says a word which is reminiscent and indicative of something which we talked about a little bit more last week. And I'll tell you what the Maral says, and we'll go over quickly what we talked about a little bit last week in this regard. The battery ran out probably. Yeah. So the what he says is like this. A ger who converts and joins the Jewish people, generally speaking, we don't speak about him as having a relationship with Hashem. We speak about him as having a relationship with the Jewish people. And the Jewish people have a relationship with Hashem, and he has a relationship with Hashem as part of the Jewish people. Right? We don't speak of ourselves individually either, right? He joins to become part of Klal Yisrael. But he says, in Yisrael's case, he was a Rei Elokel. That was the uniqueness of the Geirus of Yisrael. He became connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because, he says, if Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the leader of Klal Yisrael, is going to be Tolui in Yisrael for a Zivug, for a match, so you can't make Yisrael just bottle to Klal Yisrael. If Moshe Rabbeinu is so fundamental, root of Klal Yisrael, then Yisrael has to have his own standing as well, and not just become absorbed in Klal Yisrael. That's the idea.
Because then it would absorb his daughter.
It would absorb his daughter too. So we talked about this to some degree last time when we spoke about the idea. This time, 2 times ago, we spoke about the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu had to, Maral had the question, why did Moshe Rabbeinu marry somebody outside of the Jewish people? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu not marry somebody who was more with the great pedigree that his brother Aaron HaKohen married? And we went through all kinds of stuff. And the first stage, which the Maral spoke about, was the idea that because Moshe Rabbeinu was Keneged Kol Yisrael, he was, you know, the equal to all of the Jewish people, so then picking out one woman from the bunch just is asymmetric, just doesn't work. And so therefore Moshe Rabbeinu had to have somebody who also was to some degree outside of Kol Yisrael in order to be his partner. And what we talked about last week to sort of build on this, and the Maral here, you know, really seems to be, you know, resonate with that. I'm not going to say that's what he's saying, but it resonates with that, is that usually the process of Geirus is, as we have in the case of Rus, which is Amech Ami Ve'Lekayech Elokai. You join the Jewish people, and by dint of that, you become connected to Hashem Yisbarach. Hashem established a relationship with Avram Avinu. He's not there necessarily to establish the same parallel relationship with others. Once he established a relationship with Avram Avinu, the door, certainly at Har Sinai, the door to establishing relationship with people in the world was closed. It was with Avram Avinu. And when somebody wants to join the Jewish people, which we know that door is still open, they come through the door of the Jewish people. They become a son of Avram Avinu. They join through meeting with a Beis Din Yisrael, a representative tribunal from the Jewish people, who absorb the person and say, you are welcome, you are now part of the Jewish people. Not, you have now established a relationship with God. You've established a relationship with the Jewish people, and because Jewish people have a relationship with God, so of course you have as much a relationship with God as any other Jew. But you did it by way of the Jewish people, right? It's like, you know, some special deal that you can't get by yourself, but you can get it through that corporation that you are a client of, or something like
that.
That's
what we did at Har Sinai, though, isn't it?
What do you mean? At Har Sinai, we established.
We established that it's like a corporate deal. That's Ladar Dara. So isn't this a similar, an analogous type of thing? Are you saying that we have a direct relationship with
Avram? At Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the relationship with us, graduated the relationship with us that he had with Avram Avinu, to the Bnei Avram, through this, you know, doing it directly. But when somebody now wants to come, they can't say, let me have my own Har Sinai. They have to come and associate with the Har Sinai of the Jewish people. When a person who joins the Jewish people davens, they say, Elokeinu v'Elokei Aviseinu, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak v'Elokei Yaakov, our God, the God of our fathers, the God of Avram, the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov. And as the Rambam wrote in his letter to Ovadia Hagir, to the convert Ovadia, he said, we all have the same history. We all do that because you've joined the Jewish people. Don't say Havdili Havdilani Hashem Alamo. We all have the same history. We all have the same background. That's the way the person joins the Jewish people. Rus said, or Nami said, Rus said, your people are my people. Your God is my God. Yisrael, however, did not join the Jewish people. Not immediately. He would eventually join the Jewish people. But at this stage, he had converted to belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his own, remotely, in the land of Midian. And so his daughter, who joined them in this journey, was not part of the Jewish people yet. They had established their own, as the Maral calls it over here, Reus Lokel. Right? Reuel is, he had his own independent relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that was what made it that that could be the partner of Moshe Rabbeinu, because to be just one again who is Tolui, who is dependent on Moshe Rabbeinu, wouldn't work. And even though Moshe Rabbeinu would want to bring his wife and so on to be part of Klal Yisrael, not because, not to be below her, but it would always be frustrated and they would end up going back and going back, because in a certain sense that distinction, that parallel, must remain. She would not be Batel Etzel Yisrael, he would not be Batel Yisrael, he would have his own reus, his own relationship with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Okay, so that's next phase. So Reuel says, Madua miharten b'hayim, why did you get here so fast, so quickly today? Right? They were used to being harassed, it took them a long time. And they said, Ish Mitzri Hitzilonu Miyad Harayim, there was an Egyptian man who saved us from the shepherds. And he drew water for us and he watered the sheep. Now, Maral, there are many things in these psukim. For some reason, the Maral does not interpret why it says Ish Mitzri, you know, which Chazal speak about that a little bit and so on and so forth. I can't explain to you what he doesn't say. Have a hard enough time trying to explain to you what he does say. Right? So he says, Vayashkes Hatzayim, and he watered the sheep. Now, Chazal make a drasha on that. And what's the drasha? Because what would you have expected it to say? Vayashkes Tzayinenu. He watered our sheep. But it says he watered the sheep. So what does that mean? So Chazal Darshan, Shehishka Kol Tzayin. He watered all of the sheep. All the sheep that was around. Why? Because because there was this special bracha that the water bubbled up to greet Moshe Rabbeinu. Instead of it being this schleppy job of having to drop the pail into the well, crank, 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 you know, it hits, it fills, and then, you know, crank it back up, and the whole thing is a long amaisa. What happened was the water all rose and it just, you know, skimmed. They just skimmed it off the top. It all was virtually overflowing into the trough. So therefore, it didn't just make it easier for our sheep; it made it easier for everybody's sheep. So what was the result of that? So he says, "Oy vey, why did you leave this guy? Why hikir boishu mizera shel Yaakov shabeir mizbarach b'shvilei." He recognized that he must be a descendant of Yaakov Avinu, because that's what happens. The Be'er is blessed as a result of him. And we have this notion that we find even, right, by Rivka, right? Rivka, the water rose up to greet her and so on and so forth. But here it says specifically a descendant of Yaakov, that it is Mizborech, that the well is blessed because of him. We know that, for example, when Yaakov Avinu came to Mitzrayim, so the Nile again began to overflow. We'll take a little skip in the Maral to the next Chazal which he brings, which he will treat them ultimately as a pair. And he says, and the Pasuk says, so Yisrael said to them, Vayei, where is he? Why did you leave the man? Invite him, let him have some bread here. So Chazal Darshan Vayei, what's Vayoi? He says, maybe he's a descendant of the one where they said, Aye Sarah Ishtecha, where is Sarah your wife? Remember that? Mm-hmm. In Parshas Vayera, when the guests came and Avraham Avinu hosted them, they said, where is Sarah your wife? Right? She's inside the tent. So they said, we're going to come back in a year and she's going to have children. So those descendants, say Chazal, the world is blessed because of those descendants. So we have one Chazal where he notices them as the descendants of Yaakov, that the world is blessed on his account. The other is the descendants of Sarah in that exchange, that the world is blessed on their account. What's going on? What are the two ideas, the two facets that are here? So the Maral explains each. And he says that Yaakov Avinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the bracha. which is Birchay Shamayim Me'ol Birchay Stohaim Revetzes Tachas, brachas from the heavens above and brachas of the depths that crouches below. That was the water table, you know, that's there below the surface of the earth. That's the bracha of Yaakov Avinu, and it was given specifically to Yaakov Avinu, that he has the brachas of the depths. And what does that mean? That means that the water's always there for you to be able to access. The truth is that the brachas of the heavens, the brachas of the heavens are much more vulnerable, it seems, because you get rain. Is rain always there? Is all rain always available? But when you have your source down here on this earth, so then it's much more consistent. There's always water down there. There's always water beneath the table. And what Maral interprets this is that this is the bracha of constancy, of blessing without interruption, because that's the nature of Yaakov Avinu. Because Avram Avinu, not all of his heritage continued. There was somebody called Yishmael. Yitzchak Avinu, not all of his heritage continued. There was something called Esav. But Yaakov Avinu, we have a tradition. Yaakov Avinu is Emes. Yaakov Avinu is Mitosei Shleima. Every one of his descendants is part and remains part of the Jewish people. The Gemara says, Gemira Delei Kala Shifta. We have a tradition that no Shevet will ever be completely wiped out. Rashi writes in Chumash that when Yaakov got the impression that Yosef had been torn up by the wild animals, he was devastated. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu knew that his uniqueness, his quote-unquote Olam Haba, hinged on the fact that all of his descendants would be there, would continue. And now one of the Shvatim was gone. I forget the fact that it was his beloved child, that it was the child from Rachel Imenu and all of that stuff, that any of his children would be gone, so to speak, did him in. Yaakov Avinu represents the constancy of the bracha. Right? The heavens, the brachas of the heavens, the water which comes from the heavens is necessarily intermittent. Right? There's a rainy season, there's a dry season. Sometimes even the rainy season doesn't come. But the tahaimais, the wellsprings beneath the earth, there, that is, there's a constancy to that. It's here all the time. Now, there is a debate in the Gemara of Nor Mikipe Mivrich. There's a debate in the Gemara as to whether the wellsprings below are also influenced by the rain coming from above. And again, I'm interpolating a little bit here into the Maharal, but that's side number one. That's the idea of the wells swelling up. Yeah.
Would you say that the water from the heavens is totally on the community, like the bracha for the community? The community is like action, and the water from below is totally on the individual who's like digging the well to find it?
It's an interesting chiluk. It wouldn't apply to the Nilus, but it may apply in other situations. It's interesting. So that's one chazal. But the other chazal, as we said, associates Yisrael asking, where is he, with perhaps he the descendant of the woman regarding whom they said, where is she? Where is she? So says Maral, from there is the source of bracha to the whole world. So Maral says something utterly beautiful. Utterly beautiful. He says, you know, the Gemara says, Ein habracha mitzuya ela bedavar hasamui min ha'ayin. Blessing is found by something which is hidden from the public eye. Something which is modest. Right? We don't want to flaunt, because in fact we say that the more we showy we are, the less blessed, heaven forbid, it will be. But we worry about ayin hara, that will bring down that which is visible. Modesty brings blessing. Right? The Gemara says the first luchos that were given to the Jewish people at Sinai with thunder and lightning and kailei kaileis and, you know, resounding noises and who knows what, those ended up smashed at the foot of the mountain. The second luchos, where Moshe Rabbeinu was privately in an audience with Hashem while the Jewish people were going about their business as usual, those still exist to this very day. Ein lecha yafa min hatznius. When something is hidden, so good, quiet, private, subtle. And we've learned, even in recent Prokem of the Maral, repeatedly about how the deepest things are the most real things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is invisible. Hashem hides himself. Right? He's not something which is visible in the regular sense of the world. That's depth. When you look in a person, you find something which is quiet. They're not wearing it on their sleeve. I think I mentioned to you a month or two ago this incredible, incredible Avaida that the Kelmers, the students of the altar of Kelm, right, were encouraged to do, which was that their deepest insights, it's very hard to understand, you know, I'm just saying, they couldn't share. They weren't allowed to tell anybody. Because when it's mamish yours and only yours, and you don't tell it to anybody, it's so much more real and so much more profound than when you go ahead and talk about it. Says the Maharal, well, Ayesara Ishtecha. What does Rashi say on Ayesara Ishtecha? Ayesara is in the tent. What do you mean? She's the hostess with the mostest, right? She made all this wonderful food. Well, she isn't out there. Why did they ask Avraham Avinu that question? It was in order to highlight to Avraham Avinu the modesty of his wife, the modesty of Sarah. Look, where is she? She's ba'ayel. She's in the tent. That was the koyach of Sarah. And that koach, that modesty, is what brought the burgeoning blessing. It's not just the modesty in terms of sexuality that we're speaking about, the way the Maharal is interpreting it. You know, I always like to explain. I think it's very, this is an akuda which is great emes. You could, I say it to you now, especially because it's Parshas Vayera, and we're at Parshas Lech Lecha this week, coming up right up to these Parshias. But what happens in Parshas Vayera? Remember what happens in Parshas Vayera? These three malachim, they visit Avram, and then they visit, at least two of them go and they visit Sodom. From Avram to Sodom. There's no paragraph break in the Torah between the stories. Right? He sees the same malachim go from this place to that place. What do they meet by Avraham Avinu? Two things. Chesed, tremendous chesed, right? Kechai Mayayim, the heat of the day, 100 years old, recovering from a bris, etc., etc. Tremendous proactive chesed, and the great modesty of Sarah. That's where they meet, the chesed of Avram and the modesty of Sarah. They go to Sodom, what do they meet? They meet the complete lack of chesed of Sodom, and they meet what the English language associates with Sodom, immorality. There are two sides of a coin.
He sends his daughters out of the house.
That's correct. That's correct. Ramban says he wasn't doing anything weird. Right? We say, what is he doing? Is he crazy? He wasn't doing anything weird. That was normal in Sodom. Out of the house, yes, not behind the door. They wanted the door closed. And Maral speaks about, if I'm not mistaken, over there in the Gur Aryeh, about the idea Adel Sagar Badai, but that had to be, again, tznius. It's not just sexual tznius that we're talking about here. Because what's the Vahayoy of Moshe Rabbeinu? So, you know, tell me something. If you went to a well in Midian, or any place, right, and you come there and there are seven damsels in distress, right? And they're being preyed upon by these guys. And you stand up, Vayeshion, and you save them. And you give the sheep to drink. Where are you headed next? Where are you headed next? Aren't you headed to the congratulations line?
Good morning,
yeah, come,
America.
You know, what, huh?
Good morning, America.
Good morning, America. You know, where's my PR guy? Right? Can anybody post the video on YouTube, please? At least simply to take credit for what you did. But what happened? Moshe Rabbeinu was the phantom. He did it, and he disappeared.
Where is he?
He wasn't seeking. Vayai, where is he? A person does something like this for you? Where is he? Bring him here. What does that mean? Because it's not like they didn't say thank you and whatever it was, and you know they weren't menschlich, you know, they didn't offer him lunch and so on and so forth. Of course they did. But Moshe Rabbeinu demurred. No. Right? So okay, you don't want to come. But Yisrael said, wow, the power of his sneers, of his modesty. It's reminiscent of the woman from whom all the bracha in the world would come, the woman of modesty. Sarah, right? She went. She was the woman behind the man, right? You know, feeding all these guests and so on and so forth. She was only 89, not 99. She hadn't had a bris. But come on. So he recognized this. He realized the matter. And kol bracha behester utznius. All bracha comes behester uvitznius. And the Maral says that's the two things. Right? He recognized about Moshe Rabbeinu, the well swelling up, a descendant of Yaakov Avinu, which is the eternal bracha, and he recognized about his modesty, a descendant of Sarah Imenu, which is expressed as universal bracha. All the world finds its bracha in the inner, in that which is kept subtle and quiet. And the one who has to wear his accomplishments on his sleeve is not going to be the Makara bracha, is not going to be the source of blessing for the world. That's what the Maral says there. Okay? Good? Good enough? I think that's very special. Kirenlai v'yoychalachem. So now we go on to perhaps, to one of the most noted aspects here, where he says, why didn't you invite him to have him eat some bread? Right, so what does Rashi say on v'yoychalachem? Says Rashi, that was a euphemism. Shema yisachas mikem. Maybe he will marry one of you. Kima da'at amrit, kima lechem asher hu oichel. Right? Like when Yosef HaTzadik was in the house of Potiphar, it says he was entrusted with everything in the house other than the bread that he used to eat. Which means, right, simple pshat in the pasuk, of course, is that all of the responsibilities of Potiphar he handed over to Yosef. He only took care of himself, whatever his personal needs were. However, Chazal understand that, certainly in the context of the story of Yosef in the house of Potiphar, is that the only thing he withheld from him was his wife. And lechem asher weichel, the bread that he was eating, was a euphemism for his wife, as Rashi brings, I believe, in Parshas Vayeshev, where the story occurs, as it says, ochla umacha sapia. Right? We find the euphemism as well elsewhere of bread to that. No, it doesn't bring the pasuk. It just says he yishtayel shadibir b'lashon nekiyah. Okay, but somewhere Chazal say that comparison. So he says maybe he will marry one of you. Okay, so Maral doesn't spend specific amounts of time darshening on that piece, but what he does is he brings the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, of course, with the understanding that what Yisrael was trying to do was not just to give bread, but to forge a real connection, a connection of marriage, what would be the Reuel connection, is that the Gemara makes a beautiful comment, which says that Gedoyla Legima, Shehirchika Shtei Mishpachas Miyisrael, Legima is feeding or swallowing, whatever it is. It has to do with having people eat together. So he says, having people eat together is a very significant thing. Why? Because in its absence, it distanced two families from the Jewish people. Why? Because why aren't we supposed to marry from Ammon and Moab? Because they didn't give us to eat. And Rav Yochanan said, it brings close those who are distant. Why? Because when Yisrael gave Moshe Rabbeinu to eat, that attached him to the Jewish people, that his daughter would marry Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Gemara continues and says, and Mashre Shechinase Anevi'e Baal, it can even bring the Shechina on false prophets, because we have a story like that also at the table. And it could also cause Hashem to look away from the evil, that we have that from Micha, from a story by Micha. So the Gemara is giving great stock to eating together and the closeness which is forged by sharing food with somebody else, and says that the Kirena Levi'echalechem, which ultimately means that he'll marry one of you, is formed by the Kirena Levi'echalechem in the plain meaning, which is We're going to eat together. Now, of course, you understand that that's why we are cautious in terms of all the halachas, especially those who are learning the Daf HaYomi, No, Mar just spoke about pitan v'yenan mishum b'nisim pitan v'shavna mishum yenan v'yenan mishum b'nisayim. All the gzeiros chachamim about not eating together with goyim, even when it's kosher ingredients, because of the bonds that that can create, the social bonds that are created by eating together. So, but the Maral explains it in a deeper way, in a deeper way, and he explains it on two levels. On the first level, he says as follows. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Ikar HaKoyel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the root of everything. We say a person who denies HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kaifer BeIkar. He's the root, he's the source of everything, of every blessing that we have. And he says the same way the Ikar supports all that, the tree and all of its branches, so Hashem supports everything else. And so he says, Mishu karev el gufa ilan mimenu bo haparnosa el acher. The closer something is to the root, to the trunk, to the body of the tree, the more it participates in sustaining others. So he says, all of these chazal, and they're not just speaking about the social benefits. Oh, there's Klal Yisrael. You want to come close to Klal Yisrael? Feed them. You want to come close to the Indians? Feed them. You want to come close to the Urdu? Feed them. No. The Pasuk isn't speaking about that. The Pasuk is saying, Mikareves es harachaykim, umrachekes es hakroivim. What does that mean? It's speaking, and mashra shechina al nevi'e habal. It brings them close to Hashem, even people who naturally wouldn't be. Why? Because feeding somebody is doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of sustenance for everything that exists in the world. Ulafikach writes the Maral, Mishu mefarnes umashpia parnasa la'acher miskarev eloikar. If you join in the process of supporting and sustaining others, you are making yourself closer to the Ikar, to Hashem Yisborach. And the opposite, if you don't do so, you are distancing yourself from the root of all good, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is a Baal Tzedakah. And so the person who is also a Baal Tzedakah, I don't mean Tzedakah just in the sense of charity, right? Tzedakah in the sense of giving, of helping. Hashem is the most basic definition of Hashem Yisbarach is that he brought everything into existence and he sustains everything's existence. So one who provides sustenance to others is identifying with Hashem Yisbarach. And therefore, when Yisrael brought sustenance, that brought him closer to Hashem Yisbarach and therefore to Klal Yisrael. When Amon and Moav didn't bring sustenance, that's distanced them from Hashem Yisbarach and therefore distanced them from Klal Yisrael. You see, it's a whole different take. It's not because eating together creates a bond between this guy and his friend, and when this guy happens to be a Jew, you're in good shape. It's because it brings you closer to Hashem Yisbarach. And he says, and that's why it would be Masher Shechina, even on the V.A. Abal, because when they're giving each other sustenance, their prophecy might be fake, but their sustenance is real. It was a real sandwich. And why is it Malemes Ayin Minor Hashem? Why does it cause Hashem to turn his eye away from the evil, from din? Because when you're speaking about sustenance and giving, that's bracha. Din is Omar Loi Lomai Dai, is the suspension of bracha. Din is you get what you deserve. Bracha is overflowing giving and goodness. When you give, so then it takes away din. Right? Remember the Rashi in Parshas Kisavai, the Medrash, right? Also found to some degree in Parshas Vayera, right? That says, Hashkifa mimayim katzucha min hashamayim uvarech hazam chi Yisrael. Look out from your holy abode, from the heavens, and bless Klal Yisrael. Say Chazal, wherever it says Hashkifa, it's negative. Wherever it says Hashkifa, it's negative. Din, Hashkifa is critical. Like it says, Vayashkev al pnei Sidaim, they looked out on Sidaim. But over here, it ends up being a bracha. Baruch Hashem Yisrael. Why? Because what's it coming from? It's coming on the heels of people giving their truma to the kohen, their meiser to their levi, the meiser ani. They're giving, 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 giving. People are giving to each other. So that is great, that it takes away din. Because when there's bracha found down here, then there's none down there. When they looked out on Sodom, what was the most incriminating thing of Sodom? There wasn't bracha. Zaka Sodom v'Amora, the cries of the oppressed by Sodom. That's what brought their din. What brought bracha to Avram Avinu? The achnasas orchim of Avram Avinu. The achnasas orchim of Sarah Imenu. That's what brought the bracha where the unnatural birth took place. Because when you give, you're attaching yourself to Hashem as the source of blessing. When you don't, you're distancing yourself from Hashem as the source of blessing, and therefore you're distancing yourself from Hashem, and you are associating yourself also with a lack of blessing, heaven forbid, with din. That's level one that the Maral explains. Level two, says the Maral, v'oid yesh l'chalodas, and furthermore you have to know that on a deeper level that's the case, because it's not just that we're all dependent on Hashem, but because a person always has a choice in life. Rav Dessler writes about this beautifully in the Kuntres HaChesed. You have two options. One option is to give, and the other option is to receive. But you don't just have two options. You have two faculties. You have two components to yourself. The spiritual part of you, the godly part of you, gives. The physical, material part of you takes, receives. That's the way it is. The material is bolea, right? Avram Avinu in Pirkei Avos is contrasted with Bilam. And Bilam is bolea. He's defined as being completely materialistic and self-centered. Everything comes to him. Avram Avinu is the consummate spiritual person, not focused on himself. He's ayin taiva, nefesh shefela, ruach gevaya. Right? He's not ruach nemucha. He's humble, not looking for attention. He's not looking for material things for himself. He wants to give to others. From Avram Avinu, he's Av, Father, giving. The arrows are pointed outward. That's the spirit. That's the soul. Bilam is all physicality. Tamais Nasi Mais Yisharim is death. He's swallowed up by the earth. He's gone. Right? Bilam is all about what he gets. There's physicality, which takes, and spirituality, which gives. When a person, it practices legima, meaning giving somebody else, then that attaches the person to the Rabbanu Shalom. That's the spirit. Not just because, like before, Maral was saying on one level, Hashem sustains the world. You're joining in sustaining the world, so you're joining with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's saying it's something more integral. The spirit gives, Hashem gives. Physicality is mekabel. HaNivdal Naisein VaGeshem Hu Mekabel. The nivdal, that which is transcendent, gives. That which is physical, rooted in the physical, receives, takes, swallows. And so he says, when Amon Umayav didn't give, right, even though they came from Avram Avinu's family, from light, and they were originally connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they went from givers to takers, they were distanced from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Right? When Yisrael became a giver, he became attached to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. When the Nevi'ei Abal practice giving, that actually brings them some connection to spirituality. So even though they have all kinds of distorted wiring and efforts in terms of their attempts, but here it will work. Umalemes ayin min orishoyim. So here he just says the same thing, that because since they're doing chesed, so therefore they're not going to be faced with din. That's the idea. And that's the ikar. That's the main point which the Maral says. He goes on, and he says, Shigigasei oyla zodain. It says about legima that a mistake with it is considered deliberate. Meaning that if he didn't give food to somebody by mistake and something happened to the person, it's considered like a mazid. And he says that the idea is because the way we find in Chazal the notion of shigigasei oyla zodain, where do we find that expression? You should be zoyer in learning, because shigigas talmud oyla zodain, because mistaken learning counts like something which is done deliberately. And he says the idea is because when you go to the higher things, the higher faculties, the sikhli, the intelligent, there's no room for error. There's no margin of error. There's no, oh, this was my mistake, I wasn't thinking. You're in the world of that which is thinking. Right? Mistakes come from being rooted in physicality. Since legima is not about eating, it's about giving to eat. So therefore, we view it on the higher level. It's not trapped or excused by the normal excuses of physicality because it's above it. That's the essential idea, the essential lesson which the Maharal is teaching here in this last section. You know, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter famously said that Zayin Gashmias, the other person's Gashmias, is your Ruchnias, is your spirituality. The other person's material needs are your spirit, is your spirituality. Your spirituality isn't just to sit with a sitter or with a Musar safe or with burning lips, you know, with flaming lips, involved in spiritual things. You go, you give somebody a good fat steak, some bacon, some fresh rolls, and make him a nice thing, whatever it is. That's your ruchnias. That's this Gemara according to the Maharal. Gedayla legima. Legima is great. It's not just because when people eat together, so food, food is your physical side. And I'm not dismissing that's another explanation here. We know, for example, that that's why marriage has to have a healthy physical dimension, right? Because on the realm of physical joy and physical happiness is going to help bring people together. That's an expression of the notion of Gedayla legima in the simple pshat. But the Maharal says there has to be more than that. That there's more to it than that. And the idea is because when there's a giving of physical pleasure, then you're being godly. Because that's ruchnias. To give physical pleasure is ruchnias. To give physical being is what Hashem does. To be a giver rather than a taker is spirituality. And therefore this act of kirenu levi'echa lachem becomes the signal act of Yisrael becoming attached to Moshe Rabbeinu. Being attached to spirituality, gedayla lekima, shemekareves es harachik.
It's Shabbos. Shabbos, you're more likely to have people come to eat, etc.